Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, November the 5th, day number 310 of 2012. Before we get going, I just want to congratulate, or say thank you, I should say, to our friends at Blog Talk Radio. Our show is featured tonight again. We're on the front page, so we're being heard live at the moment by hopefully a lot of people. It will also be on the front page for a good portion of tomorrow. This is our pre-election show. This is the first time in my life that I've ever done a show on the day before the election. It's really interesting. It's fascinating. We're going to have some predictions tonight. Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor, is going to be joining me tonight, and we're going to be making some predictions. We'll be talking about what's going to happen tomorrow, some interesting things. Of course, the presidency, the U.S. Senate, lots of exciting things happening in the country tomorrow. But we begin with our good friend Aaron Cleary, our sponsor for our first segment tonight with the book Worthless. How are you, Aaron?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing great. I was going to. Is there a lot of excitement in Minnesota for the election?
Well, you know, we're big time liberals out here. We're the only state to vote Mondale back in the Reagan versus Mondale election. So I think they're all hoping for Barack Obama. But honestly, we'll put it this way: my political analysis is that I'm going to drink if Romney wins out of happiness. I'm going to drink out of complete indifference if Obama wins tomorrow. So, that's my in-depth political analysis here from Minnesota.
All right. Well, tell us about this great book, Worthless. You wrote this book, and it's been quite a success with parents and with kids. Tell us about it.
Well, it has been a success, especially for something that's been self-published. It's gaining momentum and steam, but basically the reason for that is it speaks directly to probably the single biggest issue facing young adults and old children today, and that is, what do they go and choose for a college degree or college major? And it's, unless you've had your head in the ground, there's plenty of stories out there about the education bubble, people going to school, going to college, graduating with a ton of debt and 4 years of their youth wasted, and they can't find a job. So I wrote this book with high schoolers and college students specifically in mind, providing them a guide as to go about how to choose a degree or a major that's going to best serve them. And so it goes over the starting salaries, but more importantly, it goes over why certain degrees have more pull than others, so that it's not just, here's a number, kid, go major in chemical engineering, because not everybody wants to become a chemical engineer. It provides them a guide as to go how to choose something that is not only going to pay off, but something that they also like as well and can enjoy as a career.
Yeah, because you're exactly right. Not everybody coming in can become an industrial engineer or a chemical engineer. There's a certain vocational, I guess, a certain love of engineering that you need to do that. But there are other degrees that are technical that are more suitable for, let's say, somebody like me who would have never become an engineer, but who obviously would like to graduate and make money.
Right. And there's plenty of careers. It's not like you hear engineering, you think that's all it is. Well, that's not true. There's plenty of other things, and some things that are a heck of a lot easier to get a four-year degree, even a liberal arts degree. There are the trades. Everyone has mocked and ridiculed the trades. Oh, you're a plumber. You're an electrician. Well, I got news for you now. The ladies are eyeing up those electricians and plumbers because these guys are pulling down 60, 70, and if you're in the Bakken oil field, 120K a year. There's a lot of options out there. It's not just you all got to become computer nerds or something like that. You can become doctors. You can become accountants. You become actuaries. There's a lot of things out there. So, yes, I know you may like poetry and you may like studying literature, but those are things that can be studied at the library for free, and you don't have to spend $60,000 for 4 years to go to the library for free. So the book really does open eyes for the young kids out there and gives them a lot more options than they think they probably had.
Right, and a lot of these plumbers and electricians, they very often end up having their own companies. For example, on the back of our church bulletin, I counted the other day the number of trades who advertise. It's like 10 or 12 of them. You know, guys who are plumbers, they fix a roof, electricians. I mean, these guys are making a living and being self-employed. I mean, that's not a bad way to go.
Heck, and I'd apply, you know, because I don't really get along with authority too well. I would apply at least a $50,000 per year premium not having a boss. If you're your own boss, that is unspoken payment that you don't have to pay taxes on top of. So there's, yeah, definitely with the trades, you get to be your own man or woman. You get to call the shots as you see fit, and the world is your oyster. You are not going to be held down by some middle management schmo who's bucking for a promotion and trying to keep your wage down. You get to go and run as fast as you can.
That's right. Well, we have a link to the book on the show information right under the guest information. You can see right there, Aaron Cleary, Worthless. You can also get it at Captain Capitalism, which is Aaron's website. You can also get it at Amazon. Just type in Aaron Cleary, Worthless, and it'll take you to the site. Aaron, thanks for joining us tonight, and we'll be talking to you later.
All right, have a good night, guys.
All right. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Barry Castleman right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and just a quick on this day in history, 1912, that would be 100 years ago, Woodrow Wilson was elected the 28th President of the United States. In 1940, President Roosevelt was reelected for the third time on a day like this in 1940. And then in 1968, President Nixon was elected, or Richard Nixon was elected as the 37th President of the United States. He, of course, defeated Hubert Humphrey and George Wallace. Was also a big part of that election. And one more thing I wanted to say before we get to Barry, I had a note here from one of my friends on Facebook who sent me a note about another very important election tomorrow. This is in Puerto Rico, where they're basically having a referendum on whether to continue the relationship that they have with the United States. You know, whether I guess they're choosing between statehood or independence or the status quo. And that's kind of an interesting election. We'll keep an eye on that. We have not been focusing on Puerto Rico, obviously, because of our own election. But I appreciate my friend sending that article that was in NPR. I guess they had a big special on NPR about that. A very interesting thing happening tomorrow in Puerto Rico. I know that we have many Puerto Rican friends who listened to the show. So we'll keep an eye on that. Maybe we'll do a segment on the situation in Puerto Rico on a future show. Let's say hello to Barry Castleman. How are you, Barry?
Good evening to you, Silvio.
You know, it's crazy. You and Aaron from Minnesota on the same show again. Isn't that something?
Well, if these things happen.
Yes. Well, as we said the last time, a lot of smart people live in Minnesota, you and Aaron. Well, I got to ask you this. Of course, you're the Prairie editor, the author of the book Taking Turns, and we have a link to your website on the show information. But Barry, this is really an exciting night. You know, we're doing a show the night before. You and I have been talking for months, and we kind of knew this night was going to come, but it's here. But I got to ask you, I mean, do you recall a previous election or pre-election night like this? I mean, 76 comes to mind. That was pretty close. 1980, that was close. 2000, 2004. Any other night like this?
Well, they're always a little different. Silvio, and they always have their own character. Sometimes we knew the results in advance. In 2008, we had a pretty good idea where it was going to go. 96, we knew that Bill Clinton was going to win. 2000 and 2004, we didn't. 2000, as I say, we did in 2008. So every and the technology and the style of campaigning, all of those things combine to create different circumstances each time.
Interesting. Well, I do remember 1980. That one stands out in my mind because, of course, there was an incumbent, a challenger, somewhat like it is now. And, you know, the night before the election, we were all being told how close it was going to be. But then on election day, there was a huge movement toward Reagan. I guess nobody picked that up. Do you remember anybody? I mean, do you remember that night? Did you?
Well, I
that
do
night?
Remember.
Yeah.
I do remember the Mondale being from Minnesota was the vice presidential candidate in 1980, and I knew one of his close friends who had office in the state government here, and so on the day before, I went over on the today, which would be the equivalent of today, I went to see him, and he said, when I saw him, he said he had just talked to Mondale, and he knew, they knew it was over. Because the movement, it was very, the last polling was very clear.
Right. Now, this would have been like about this, like today, the day before, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
So they knew actually for about 48 hours.
No. Okay.
But remember, that was all about the hostage crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And when he couldn't resolve it, things really, you know, and of course, we had the 17% inflation. We had 15% unemployment. You know, it was, the numbers were incredible. Nothing's like we have. I mean, today is bad, but it was much worse then, and much more unprecedented. And so it was pretty scary. And Reagan had proved that he was up to the job. He people had tried to paint him as a Hollywood cowboy, and in fact, he turned out he was a man of great substance, and turned out to be a great president. And you could sense that from the campaign, the end of the campaign in 1980.
Yeah. Now, in 1976, I remember that one. That was kind of the first campaign that I really got involved in. And in that particular campaign, you know, Carter had a big lead in August, and then he they were tied, and then Ford made that mistake made that statement about Poland and the debate, then Carter got ahead, then they got close again. And then what I remember about 1976, election night, I mean, we went into the morning the next day, and nobody had a clue who was going to win. 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I mean, there were still some states outstanding, and things were still pretty uncertain. I don't remember which state came in and did it for Carter. But that was also another uncertain election. Obviously, the economics back then were not anywhere near what they are now. But that was pretty uncertain, too, wasn't it?
Well, you know, we're essentially a divided nation politically, divided between the pretty equal parts left, right, and center, liberal, centrist, and conservative. And so it's not surprising that in these every 4 years when we choose a president, that they usually in doubt. Usually the parties nominate someone of some, you know, of some stature. And what happened this year was it was a very hard-fought contest on the Republican side, but Mitt Romney emerged, and then from he kind of evolved and grew, because the initial Mitt, a lot of people thought, well, he was the strongest candidate in the primaries, but can he win a presidential race? And then we got to the debates, and then suddenly we realized that he was the strongest figure in the race, and the country figured that out too, and that was the turning point. Now we'll just see whether this leads in the end to a Romney victory or not, but it's. You know, we have a very strong Republican nominee this time,
right?
And he's made it very competitive, and he's leading in the major polls, national polls. There are a couple of polls which have overweighted Democrats, but basically, if we interpret the polls, Romney is about, you know, I think Dick Morris made the point that you have to really translate these polls, and Morris is a little more optimistic than I am. He says that Romney is 4 to 5. Well, he's about 5 points ahead. I think Romney is three to four points ahead, maybe a little less, but who knows for sure.
Right.
I can't imagine that there's a dispute about who's more enthusiastic this year, the Republicans or the Democrats,
mm-hmm.
just as you could not debate that the Democrats had the most enthusiasm in 2008,
That's
which
right.
made McCain's chances almost nil.
Right.
And even though it was a big, you know, he won by many millions of votes, but the Electoral College was, take a couple of states, including states that normally Democrats don't win, like Indiana, North Carolina, and Florida, and suddenly that's a close election. So using the Electoral College, most elections are fairly close. Now, 1984 with Mondale versus
Reagan
was not close. 80 was not that close.
88?
88 was, well, it was not that close. And, of course, 72 was not close. 68 was very close.
Right.
64 was not close.
Mm-hmm.
So it varies. Every, we always look back at the past and we want to make comparisons. But, you know, really every election has its own character. And we're just going to, we'll look back years from now about this election and we'll say, well, this is what happened now. Is there any parallels to this future election?
Yeah, well, you and I being baseball fans, every game's different. You know,
exactly.
There are some similarities, but every World Series is different. Every championship game is different, but there are some similarities. I just wanted to bring this to the attention of the listeners. You were talking about some of the polls, and I wrote down Gallup has Romney ahead 49-48, Rasmussen 49-48 Romney. Some of the people who have made predictions, Newt Gingrich just made his prediction, over 300 electoral votes for Romney, Barone, George Will, about that, and of course Dick Morris a little bit better than that, but they're all basically calling a Romney victory. So I think those are pretty smart people. I don't think they'd be making these predictions just for the sake of being partisan. It just doesn't... Now, I don't know about Dick Morris. I don't really know that much about his affiliation, but certainly Gingrich and George Will.
Well, and Karl
Barone.
Rove, too.
Karl Rove, yeah, that's right. You're right. Karl Rove made a...
People like the Democratic-leaning experts and pundits and all that, they're predicting Obama
right.
by a narrow margin. No one's predicting much of a margin. Interesting enough, the Democrats say we're going to win by a narrow margin, whereas the Republicans say we're probably going to win by a larger margin. So if you cut it in half, looks like the Republicans win. But I use at this point the polls are meaningless, really, people should not base their anxieties or their hopes on polls. Never should have, and certainly not now. It's all about common sense. And, you know, being a Jeffersonian myself, I have a lot of basic confidence in the American people. Now, you can say they made a mistake in 2008, but when you consider the circumstances, they didn't know anything about Barack Obama. He had no record. He provided no details. And then McCain was a well-known figure, but it was an era of Bush fatigue, of course the most unquestionable factor was the meltdown of the mortgage banking crisis. So there was really, you can't blame the American people for choosing Obama. He was offering hope and change, and there was nothing to base whether he could deliver it or not.
Right.
Now we know he can't.
Right, and he was a charming guy too. I mean, you cannot deny that. He was a charming candidate, very attractive. I think a lot of people were excited about the fact that our first black president, so there was some things going for him that, I suppose worked. But you're right, once he became president, he has certainly shown that he doesn't have much of an ability to govern. But I tell you what, I like to maybe get into a few predictions. I'll tell you mine. Now, the U.S. Senate, I don't have a state-by-state analysis like you do, so I'm going to rely on your judgment there. But here's my prediction for president. I'll do the easy one first. Obviously, the Republicans will keep the House. I think you would agree with that.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know by how many they win or lose, but, you know, give or take five either way, I suppose, depending on the turnout, it'll probably stay about the same. Now, the U.S. presidency, here's my prediction. I think that Romney will win 51-48. And the reason I say 51-48 is because there's going to be a huge vote coming from California. And that's a big state that will give Obama probably four or five million votes. And that's going to be hard to fight that, you know, because a lot of the Republican states are smaller states, with the exception of Texas, where I think Romney will probably get 60% of the vote, maybe a little bit better, because the turnout here is going to be unbelievable. A lot of it is Ted Cruz, too, running for the Senate. So 51-48, the popular vote. I think Romney will get 295 electoral votes. And the way I calculate that is I gave Romney everything that Bush got in 2004. I eliminated Nevada and New Mexico, which brings you down to 274. I added to that the new seats that we got because of the census, puts you up to about 285. And then I do believe that Romney will win Wisconsin, so that takes you up to 295. So if I'm wrong about Wisconsin, he can still win. If I'm wrong about Iowa, he can still win. But that's the way I look at it. I see it roughly along those numbers, Barry. What do you think of my prediction?
Well, it's a reasonable prediction. It wouldn't be exactly my prediction. I don't know if I'm going to make a prediction per se. I think there are a couple of because of the what I feel misleading polls. There's a lot of doubt about some states. I think that Michael Barone, more than anyone else, is the smartest vote counter in America. He knows every precinct by heart. He's been there. He is not going to be fooled by sham polls or pundits, even pundits like me. He's going to make his own decision based on the facts on the ground, and he's come up with a pretty heavy victory for Romney. There's a couple of states where there's one state that he says he's sticking his neck out on. I think it's Pennsylvania, and he did not go. He did not think Minnesota would go for Romney, it's a pretty strong prediction. And I know Michael well, and he's a cautious man. He does not make wild predictions. He always makes predictions based on what he thinks he knows and knows well. And if he doesn't know, he doesn't predict. So that doesn't make it so, but that's a prediction that I take very, very seriously. I think on the presidential election, it comes down to not so much what the polls say, but what you think is going on in the country. Now, with the bad economy, the high unemployment, the Middle East problems, the Benghazi affair, the Obamacare, which is very unpopular. It's hard to imagine that most Democrats are enthusiastic as they were in 4 years ago. So, the polls that are measuring enthusiasm clearly show a major difference of about in double digits of favoring the Republicans, just as they did the exact opposite in 2008. When the Democrats had a huge favorability and intensity advantage. So it's hard for me to imagine how, with Republicans turning out in probably record numbers, certainly all the polls indicate their enthusiasm. Not all the polls. In fact, there was a very interesting poll in Iowa yesterday where the Des Moines Register, which is the major newspaper of the state, conducts a poll. And they had Obama winning Iowa by, I think, 2 points. But the person who ran the poll said, I think we have a problem because 5% of the votes of the people said they had made up their mind, but they weren't going to tell us what it was. Now, frankly, those are not Democrats. Democrats always like to tell you who they're voting for. But Republicans, especially evangelical Republicans and other Republicans, don't necessarily usually resent polling in many ways, and because they think it's biased. And so they refused. So these were not people who were undecided. These were people who had made up their minds, and they were 5%. That's a very large number. So she herself said, I don't even know if I believe my own poll. Wow. I mean, in effect, that's what she said. So, you know, its question is, who do you think is turning out? Now, I wrote a column, as you know, Silvio, and those who read my columns, that said that the get-out-the-vote effort for the president is a very good one. No one should ever doubt. He's proven in 2008 his capability, and although they didn't have a practice trial run like the Republicans did with a primary season, it's still a very good turnout-the-vote effort, and they've got labor. They've got wherewithal. They've done it before. They know what they're doing. The media has basically treated the Republican get-out-the-vote effort with, you know, disdain. And, for example, one illustration was Ohio, where there are 400 Obama field offices and only about 80 for Romney. So they said, well, obviously, that's not even worth talking about. But, in fact, that's very misleading. Yes, there are 400 field offices, and they are very well run, and they will turn out their vote as best they can. But what the Republicans have is something different, a very decentralized get-out-the-vote effort. And it's made up of their – whereas the labor and all the feminists and all the other groups that are allied with the Democrats are working together on their get-out-the-vote effort in this centralized form, the Republicans have the pro-lifers, the evangelicals, they have
The churches. The churches are very big.
The churches are very big.
Here in
Catholic
Texas,
Church.
That's right.
You have the NRA making
right.
the biggest effort in history.
That's right.
So you have a great deal of activity, of even some of it overlapping, but getting out their vote. For example, in Ohio, 300,000 evangelicals did not choose to vote in 2008 for McCain because they were not impressed with him. And they certainly weren't going to vote for Obama, but they weren't going to vote for McCain, so they stayed home. So the evangelical get-out-the-vote effort has identified every one of those 300,000. And they say, we have to take it with a grain of salt perhaps, but they say all those 300,000 or most of them are going to turn out. Well, that's the margin alone.
Right. That's
and
right. Well, that,
so,
yeah, 260,000, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, so my point is none of this is being measured. None of this is being covered by the media. I wrote an article. I hadn't seen much of it. I mean, I knew about it because I know all these various groups. I have sources in them, as I do in the Democratic groups as well. And I was struck by the fact that the get-out-the-vote effort for the Republicans. So in Minnesota, for example, I was aware, you know, it was sort of poo-pooed that there was a Republican get-out-the-vote effort. Well, that's not true. The Democrats have a very good get-out-the-vote effort run by the Wellstone Alliance with labor. It's excellent. I pay them high compliments. But the Republicans have a fantastic get-out-the-vote effort on their own, not only through the party, but through these various groups, the pro-lifers, the evangelicals, the Catholic Church. You know, there's a big Catholic vote in rural Minnesota. So you know, to these polls, they don't, what do they measure anymore?
Right.
They measure babies. They're very small numbers representing millions of people. Or in the national polls, 200 million or 150 million voters are being represented by 1,000 people. Well,
right.
Common sense tells
Let me do this, Barry. We've got to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We want to get into also the U.S. Senate, and I want to follow up what you were saying. One more thing I wanted to add is that here in Texas, I don't know if it's true in other parts of the state, but here in the country, but here in Texas, the small business owners have become quite an anti-Obama group, and they are definitely, they're a force. They're really a force to be reckoned with. But we're going to take a little break, Barry. We're going to hear from our sponsor, Avalon Professional Translation. And then when we come back, we'll continue our great conversation with Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor.
Sending the right message in multiple languages is easy with Avalon Professional Translation Services. Avalon provides document and web translation in 62 languages. In addition, access to 140 languages is just a phone call away any day of the year. Events, even court depositions, no problem for Avalon. Call 972-404-1213 or go to avalontranslation.com. Avalon Professional Translation Services, global communications made easy.
That's exactly right, and we have a link to Avalon Professional Translations in the show information. You can click on that, and it'll take you to the website, and just tell Leonard Shokoff, who's the CEO, that you heard about it on the radio. It's been a real treat this year, an absolute treat to talk to Barry Castleman, and we've been looking forward to this night before the election, and here it is, and we're enjoying a great deal of Barry's wisdom and Barry's knowledge. The Prairie Editor, Barry has been around for some time. He's been covering elections, I believe, since 1972, Barry. I think you mentioned that. So
yes.
You've seen a few of these, and we're enjoying very much your explanation tonight of the polls, but I agree with you. I mean, I think a lot of these polls are very very confusing. And the other thing I wanted to say is that, in fact, Pat Cadell was the one I think I heard talk about this the other day. 30% of the homes in this country don't even have landlines. So how do you reach people like that? You don't, I guess. And, those people will probably vote. So we don't know what these polls are actually saying, Barry. Go ahead.
Well, much more, as equally important anyway, is the fact that in order to get a sample, they have a sample of 1,000. Well, we know some polls where they have to call 15,000 people to get 1,000. People are turning them down. It's not like it was in the 50s and 60s when people enjoyed being polled. Today, people hang up the phone, or people deliberately tell. The opposite of what they're going to do. Polling is become, as I said in my latest column, the polling profession in America is on trial. And I, for their sake, I hope they're pretty accurate this time, because if they're not, we will not be using polls like we have been doing in the past.
No, I think we're going to have to come up with a different mechanism. In fact, there was a poll today. I think it was CNN, Barry, that came out with a poll today, where they have Democrats plus 11.
Right.
I mean, how can anybody do something like that? Another poll that I saw that came out today, USA Today, I think it was, and, you know, I look at I've gotten to the point now that I always go to the bottom and look at the sample first, you know.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, because I think that's like almost like when you go to the store and you look at a can, you want to see the ingredients first, you know. And so anyway, I look at the bottom of the USA Today poll, registered voters. I said, why waste our time? Why waste my time reading a poll on the day before the election of registered voters when we know half of those people aren't even going to vote?
That's
so
right.
It's frustrating, but I think you're right. I think we're going to have to come up with a different system. Maybe we can do more stuff online. I really don't know what the next step is, but we'll see. I guess tomorrow night we'll see how these polls how correct or incorrect they are. But let's look, if we could jump for a minute here, to the U.S. Senate. I don't know really what to predict, because I don't have knowledge of each of the races. I do know we're going to win here in Texas. Ted Cruz will win, but of course, that's a neutral because he's replacing a Republican. I believe in your state of Minnesota, a Democrat's going to win, so that's neutral too. That won't have much of an impact. But just roughly, how do you see the U.S. Senate? Are you in a position to predict whether the Republicans will take the three seats and win the or at least have at least 50 votes to have Ryan break the tie if he becomes vice president?
Well, Silvio, first of all, at the outset of the campaign a year ago, I predicted pretty categorically that the Republicans would take control of the Senate based on the fact that there were 23 Democrats up and only 10 Republicans. And when we saw how many were potentially vulnerable, it looked like a pretty sure thing the Republicans would gain control. Now, I'm going to admit that I may have been much too optimistic, and I may have to admit that more explicitly after the election. It is now a question of whether the Republicans can take control. The three things happened that were totally unexpected. The Republican senator in Maine retired unexpectedly.
Right.
And
Olympia Snow, right?
That's Olympia right. Snow. And that meant that the Democrat, or it turns out the independent, who would caucus with the Democrats, was almost a certain win. And that's the way it's worked out. So that was a loss of one. Then we had two very, I don't know how to describe these candidates, Mr. Todd Akin.
Right.
In
Murdoch,
Missouri,
right? Murdoch
and
Indiana.
And then Mr. Murdoch in Indiana. Both let themselves get caught up in social, excuse me,
right,
social issues that are very controversial and stepped on themselves. Mr. Akin's comment was much more grievous, in my opinion, because he was just plain wrong, and I don't know anybody really who agrees with it, and he backed off completely. But Mr. Murdoch's comment was a consistently and genuinely believed pro-life point, but not one you want to go out and make an issue in a campaign where so many people disagree. And I happen to disagree, by the way, because I don't think that I think there are occasions, there are legitimate instances where you can have an abortion. Some people have no limits. I don't agree with that either. But the fact of the matter is that both those candidates, their candidacies, both of them were highly favored to win. And they are both likely to lose. So now we have lost three seats on the Republican side, potentially. And then there's Scott Brown, who's an excellent incumbent senator, but he lives in the liberal state of Massachusetts. And you know, it's just very hard to elect. He was elected to succeed Ted Kennedy, but it was a very special circumstance where there wasn't a presidential election, and he was a very able candidate. Well, he may well lose. I don't know. I'm not going to predict he's going to lose. He's been getting a little closer at the end here. He was ahead, then he was behind. Now he's getting closer. But it's probably more likely than not he will lose. So now we're down four seats. So now the Republicans have to pick up seven. And I don't see the seven exactly at this point. What we see is Nebraska, Montana, North Dakota, and probably Wisconsin all going to the Republicans, and those are all pickups. But
right.
Then it gets very, very iffy. We have Connecticut, mm-hmm. where the Republican for a while was ahead, but now looks like she's probably not going to win.
Yeah.
We do have the interesting example of Pennsylvania, where
right.
the Republican candidate was given no chance to win until just recently, because the incumbent Took didn't take the race seriously, didn't even bother to campaign in any way, and suddenly that race is a tie.
Are you talking about Casey, Senator Casey?
Casey versus versus Smith.
Right.
So that's a potential. Then we have Virginia. That's a toss-up. We don't have any idea who's going to win there. President Romney-to-be, perhaps, will probably carry Virginia, and that will help Allen. But Kane has been basically tied with him all along, or slightly ahead. Connie Mack in Florida has not been a strong candidate against Bill Nelson, the incumbent Democrat, and that doesn't look likely he's going to win. So we're running out of... Oh, then we have two far long-shot races. The one where I think that the Republicans just might win is Josh Mandel in Ohio. That's very close. And the Republicans have... the Democrats have poured $30 million to beat him into the race. And he has done very well. He is virtually tied, according to most polls. And then finally, there's the longest shot of all, but one that really could happen, and that's in the state of Hawaii, where former Governor Linda Lingle, the most successful and popular governor in the state's history, in a state that's overwhelmingly Democratic, is running against a Democratic congresswoman, Mazie Hirono. And that race is supposed to be close. According to the Honolulu paper, it's a runaway for Hirono. But according to Lingle, it's close. And we don't know. Interesting fact about that is the polls close in Honolulu and in Hawaii 5 hours after they close on the Eastern Standard Time, which means there's a 2 to 3 hour window in which the voters of Hawaii will probably know who has been elected president on the mainland. And with that information, could depress Democratic vote and stimulate Republican vote. So that race could be close. I think, to be fair, it's the longest shot of all. But there's always a surprise on election day.
Yeah.
Surprise could go the other way. It might be a Democrat who surprisingly wins.
Right.
But so it's very hard to see how the Democrats get to, certainly how they get to 51. Maybe to 50. A couple things would have to happen. In that race and in Missouri and Indiana, one of those two Republicans who made the bad mistake would have to win.
Right. Now, Barry, if I may interrupt you for a second on that, on Missouri and Indiana, because in both of those states, what I've heard, please correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've heard is that the turnout could very well save those guys. Because even in Missouri, this lady who is McCaskill, she's under 50% in most of the polls. So maybe the turnout could save Aiken and Murdoch. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, here's what the best chance, ironically, is where the worst mistake was made, which is Missouri. Missouri will be won by Romney by double digits. It has become a very conservative state and a very pro-life state. So your point is well taken. The turnout, if the turnout models are more like what I think they're going to be, as opposed to what the pollsters say they're going to be, Mr. Aiken has a chance. You're absolutely right. Mr. Murdoch has a little less of a chance. First of all, he has had a feud with Mr. Lugar, who was the Republican incumbent, and they've never resolved that. Lugar has not endorsed him. And for that reason, Murdoch's chance, he thought he could get by without it. It turns out he needed it. But Indiana also will be won by close to double digits by Romney. And it's also become a very conservative state and has a heavy pro-life vote. So anything's possible. If you asked me to make a guess, I would think that the more likely possibility for an unexpected win in those two states would be Missouri, mainly because it's more conservative and because that turnout factor will be much more important in Missouri.
Now, if you get those four, then that puts you back to 47, right? Because you still
what do you
need
mean?
To come. I mean, if you win if you pick up those seats in Nebraska, North Dakota,
right,
the ones that you were saying that we should pick up, and then you pick up Missouri, that gives you four minus Maine, that's three.
No. It's five.
Five,
so
okay.
If you get five, and instead of losing four, you lose three, now you're two ahead.
Okay, all right. So
a lot has to do with people holding their nose, Republicans
right.
holding their nose, and voting for a candidate they know who has made a bad mistake.
Right,
And I'm being very honest here.
Sure. No, I
don't even know if I would vote for it. But the point is that if Aiken or Murdoch wins, suddenly the picture changes pretty dramatically. That tells you how important having very poor candidates is. That's what happened in the year 2008 when you had three very, very weird candidates on the Republican side who lost races they should have won, including Nevada and Delaware.
You mean 2010, yeah, when you had that...
I misspoke, 2010.
Yeah, when you had that lady running in Delaware who, I forgot her name, but there was a congressman who she defeated in the primary, right? And the congressman
right.
would have been a cinch to be the... But so basically what you're saying is, if you had to, and I know you don't like to make predictions, and I understand that, but 50-50... That's all I want, frankly, because then you break the tie with Ryan. So 50-50 is like having a majority. And if we can get to 50...
For the time being.
And then you worry about...
By the way, there's another scenario here
sure.
at 50-50. If you recall, in 2006, I think it was, or 2008, well, I remember what year, there was a 50-50 split.
But that was
and
2000, wasn't it? 2000
yeah.
when...
And the Democrats were able to persuade the Republican senator from Vermont
right,
switch
right.
party.
That's right.
So it's a very... Now, that works the other way this time. Because, frankly, I don't think there's any Republicans who are thinking about switch with a Romney administration would switch to Democrat. But you could... There are at least three or four senators, most notably Joe Manchin in
West Virginia, right?
Who could be persuaded... Because that means they would get a committee chairmanship.
Right, and also
in
Arkansas.
I mean, there's a lot of trading. So well, if you were 50-50, you probably could change that to 51-49 to give you a little cushion.
Right. And there's also a senator in Arkansas. Arkansas is another very difficult state for Democrats. There's a senator whose name I cannot remember right now, but he's probably very vulnerable if he runs for re-election as a Democrat. So that's another senator that could switch just like Manchin. Up in North Dakota, but I mean in West Virginia. But the way I look at it with the Senate is, I'm okay with 50-50 because if Ryan is the vice president, then we get our majority in the U.S. Senate, which I think is going to be very critical for
right.
Romney
but
to do some things.
But let me tell you something. Let me
sure.
be honest with you. 50-50 ain't going to do the job of repealing Obamacare. You need because there's going to be they've got that 60 rule so you need a couple of extra seats so that you can have a solid at least a majority that goes along with the House. See, and then they can get into conference committees and they can work it out as long as you can pass it. But at 50-50, it's too iffy. Remember, there was very little accomplished when it was 50-50. Yes, you could win if you could get it. And remember, what happens if a senator is sick and can't be there? So now it's 50-49,
right.
even though it's 50-50. You still keep control because
sure.
you're not going to dump the majority leader, but you're not going to win the vote.
Right.
So
no,
I mean,
agree with you.
50-50
I mean,
is not a sad 50-50 is stalemate.
Right. I agree with that. I like to do better. But I'm not sure if we can do better this year because, as you indicated, with those two senators. Well, we're just about out of time, so I know you don't want to make predictions. So I'm gonna ask you this question, and maybe it'll be almost as good as making a prediction. The next time we chat, in your opinion, yes or no, is it going to be President-elect Romney that we'll be talking about? Yes or no? How's that for getting you to predict without predicting?
Well, let's put it this way. I'm not going to answer that question, but
okay.
I am going to say this. The way Governor Romney has been campaigning, speaking, acting, and behaving in the last month or two has been the behavior of a president, in my opinion. The way the actual incumbent president has been acting, speaking, behaving in the last 2 months has been unpresidential, in my opinion.
All right. Well, I think
whether
I know.
So in the end, I have to have confidence. Let me finish,
yeah.
Silvio.
Sure.
I told you I was a Jeffersonian. I have confidence that the American people can figure it all out. And they don't have to always agree with me, and I don't always have to agree with them. But I think in something as big as this, with the choice as stark as it is, I'm going to defer to the American people. So I think the American people are going to deliver to us when we next meet a new president-elect, whether it be the former president, who is the current president, who will then be president-elect as well, or Governor Romney, will deliver to us the president-elect that we need for the next 4 years. Because if we don't get that person, we're in a lot of trouble, Silvio, a lot
right.
of trouble.
No, you're exactly right. This is really a very important election, and whoever gets in, I'm thinking it's going to be Romney, but if it's President Obama who gets reelected, I hope he understands how difficult these problems are, because there are some structural problems, there's some debt problems, some real big issues. He has not been addressing them so far. He better do it if he is reelected. Well, Barry, it's been an absolute treat talking to you all year. I mean, I'm sure we'll do more shows, but I'm just saying over the last 6 months or so, it's been an absolute treat doing these shows with you. And here we are the night before the election, and we've done so many of these, and I've had so much fun with you. We even had some good baseball chats along the way. Our teams didn't get in, though. That's the hurt on that one. But it was a lot of fun, and I just want to tell you that whatever happens tomorrow happens. But for me personally, it's been so much fun chatting politics with you. We don't know each other that well, but I feel like I've known you for a long time. It's been so much fun just talking to you.
Well, and the Washington Redskins football team lost yesterday. That's a bad omen for President Obama.
Well, and maybe, let's see, when was the last time the Giants won the World Series? I don't even know. But you're right, that Redskins prediction is not a good one for President Obama. I learned about that yesterday from a friend of mine who sent me that. The Redskins lost, and every time they lose, I guess the incumbent Democrat loses or the incumbent president loses. Is that how it goes?
Something like that.
Something like that. So that's the first time in my life that I ever said, go Redskins. Because we don't like the Redskins in Dallas. You know, they are big rivals of the Cowboys.
Well, but you wanted them to lose yesterday.
Yeah, so I was just saying, that's exactly what I'm saying, you know, go lose. That's what I was saying. Yeah, that's what I meant to say, that I wanted them to lose for the first time. Well, I always want them to lose, but never as passionate as I did this Sunday.
Yes.
Barry, have a great evening, and we'll chat the next time, and we'll have a lot of answers the next time we chat.
Yes, we will.
Barry Castleman. Good night, Barry. Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor, and also the author of the book Taking Turns, a very interesting book about the election. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and once again, I want to thank my good friends at Blog Talk Radio for featuring our program tonight. If you're listening to us for the first time, thank you very much for doing that. I hope you come back and listen to more of our programs. Barry Castleman, we have a link to his website on the show information, The Prairie Editor, and it's a great website, and we definitely encourage all of our listeners to check it out. He's a very knowledgeable political pundit, has been following elections now for 40 years, 1972 to the present. That's a long time to be following presidential elections. Of course, 1972 was the year that Richard Nixon defeated McGovern, Senator McGovern, and Senator McGovern passed away a few days ago, as you may have read in your newspapers. But again, I think it's going to be an interesting day tomorrow. But I will go on the record and say that Governor Romney will win 51-48 with about 295 electoral votes, and that includes Wisconsin. Basically, I took everything that Bush won in 2004. I added Wisconsin, and I deducted Nevada and New Mexico, and that's how I got to 295 electoral votes. Romney may win Pennsylvania, but I'm not, well, let's say, I hope he does, but I'm not counting on that for him to be elected president of the United States. He may even lose Wisconsin and Iowa and still have enough electoral votes to win. So that's the landscape that I'm forecasting for Governor Romney, 51-48. About 295 electoral votes. It could be, you know, 275, 276 if he doesn't win Iowa or Wisconsin. But I think those two kind of go together, don't they? Iowa and Wisconsin, they very often vote together. I know there are some reports that he could win Pennsylvania, that he could win Minnesota, and that's great. I hope he does. I would love to see that. But I'm going to be more conservative and stick to the states that Bush won in 2004 because those are, at least in my opinion, more reliable Republican states. I think Pennsylvania, you've got the unions, and those are always very tough to compete with in a state like Pennsylvania. You've got two big cities, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, and the Democrats usually get a lot of votes out of those two cities, and I don't know if there's that many people in between, you know, in between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia to compensate for the kind of vote that the Democrats are going to get out of those two big cities. So I'm going to say Obama wins Pennsylvania. But if Romney wins it, hey, I'll be the first one to get up and start cheering because if Romney wins Pennsylvania, then we're really talking about a very big night for Governor Romney. Well, thank you so much. Again, thanks to Barry Castleman for sitting in with us for just about much of the year. He's been sitting in with us on Monday nights, and thank you for listening to our show. It's always a lot of fun to bring you these programs, and, well, go out and vote. I already voted here in Texas because we get to vote early. So I already voted, but I hope everybody gets out to vote, and I hope you vote for Romney. I mean, I'm not going to hold anything back. You got to vote for Romney. He's the man that you got to vote for tomorrow, and if you're so inclined, make sure you elect a Republican for the U.S. Senate. We got to have a Republican Senate. That's going to be pretty close, Barry was saying. Good night, everybody.